Welcome to Truth, Culture, Life. I'm your host, Royce Hood. And Father Orsi and Sierra are not here right now. We're producing this on a different day because we have a very, very special guest, Father Carlos Martins. And some of you may have seen Father on, he's been on EWTN. He's been on all sorts of media appearances. And most recently, Father is, he's got a podcast from production value to thoughtfulness to creativity. I would just say that The Exorcist Files hits all the points in terms of what you would look for a top-notch production that has just real evangelization power. And so without further ado, I want to welcome our guest, Father Martins. Father, how are you today?
I'm well, Royce. How are you?
Very, very good. I'm super excited to have you here. And we always ask Father Orsi how the weather is in Naples, Florida, and he makes me jealous because I'm in central Illinois. I'm from Florida. And typically the weather in central Illinois is miserable and he's always like on the beach. So, but you're in Detroit. I mean, I know you're all over the place, but you're in Detroit today, correct?
Today I'm in Detroit. Yeah. It's a beautiful sunny day here. Nice and mild. The temperature is in the low 60s, and rising. So we expect somewhere in the 70s by the midday or so.
No complaints there. That's the kind of weather that I'm used to. I mean, I grew up in a beach town with just beautiful, beautiful weather every day. So moving to central Illinois has been a bit of a shell shock, particularly in the winter. And it's I blame it on a lady, by the way. My wife, who I met in law school at Ave Maria, is the reason why we're here. So, but that's not why you're here. You're not here to talk about the weather. And we had Teresa Tamio on, I think, a week or two ago, and she was cracking up. She's like, did you really, you know, invite me on this program to talk about the weather in Italy? But we did. So I want to talk about The Exorcist Files. And first of all, for our listeners, I would just encourage you to check it out. I mean, and particularly send it out, share it with your friends, and you can listen to the podcast. And this is something that you hear at exorcistfiles.tv. And we will be posting, we'll post links on our Facebook page as well. So people that want to see or want to see the website and hear the podcast can. Father, without further ado, your story is incredible. I mean, you and for our listeners who heard the podcast, they may know, and some of them may already know your background, but many don't. Tell us briefly about how you got to where you are today.
Sure. Yeah. So I am a convert from atheism. I converted midway through my undergraduate degree in college. And I converted because of two events. One was observing the witness of faithful Catholics, faithful Catholic Christians, who it was a small number of them, just a handful of students that they had classes with me. They were bright. They were very faithful. And the faith was the central and defining thing about them. They just radiated the faith. And, you know, of course, I didn't believe. And I thought, you know, how could anyone believe given the state of the world? I mean, why would God create the world in this form with so much evil? Like the existence of evil was obvious. Anybody who spends more than five minutes on Earth is privy to that. So everything about these students radiated a peace, and it was powerfully attractive. And the anecdote that I like to tell is I was meeting one of them for coffee one morning at a coffee shop on campus, and we were sitting at a small little round table like you find in any coffee shop, and somebody comes in and informs him that his car was stolen out of the parking lot that morning, and it was joyridden around the back streets of the campus and crashed into a tree, so that his car now was garbage. So he receives that news, and he turns and faces me again, and he says, well, I guess it just wasn't God's will for me to have a car right now. And he could still enjoy the cup of coffee in front of him. And so that kind of living, that kind of behavior, no one exhibited. No one acted like that. The kind of peace and tranquility that this guy and in fact the entire group lived in was different, and it was powerfully attractive. And so that got me. So one of them organized a retreat for college kids, six of us were invited on a retreat. I was one of them. And I just accepted it. It was a Eucharistic adoration retreat, and I had no idea what that was.
But so wait, just so our listeners that are just tuning in know, so this was part of your conversion, and you were actually still an atheist at this point.
Oh, absolutely. Very much. Yeah. So on that retreat, which it was the witness of faithful students and the joy that they radiated when they lived their faith, that got me to accept the invitation to go. And while I was there, of course, I didn't believe, and I felt really foolish. I mean, our job was to be in a chapel and sit in front of, and they knelt in front of what appeared to me to be a cracker. You know, and so that concept at the time, I remember, felt no different. Like, what? I feel like I'm kneeling in front of a tree and talking to a tree, kind of thing. But regardless, I made a decision to be there for the whole 3 days of this retreat. And it was in the third adoration shift that I had, and it was through the night. It was at the 3 to 4 a.m. shift. All six of us had 4 hours a day of adoration. So here's this atheist signed up for Eucharistic adoration 4 hours a day. And on the third shift, boy, I went into that chapel an atheist, and I came out a believer. And it was God revealed his presence to me. I didn't see anything. I didn't hear anything. But I knew that I was in front of Almighty God. I knew I was in front of he who created me, that he loved me, that he had a plan for me. And, you know, the deal that I had made with God as I started that retreat, when I made the decision, okay, I'm going to be here. And I'm gonna follow through with my commitment to fulfill this retreat and do everything that they are doing. You know, as what I said to him is, you know, God, I don't know if you're here or not. I don't believe you are. But if you are, please reveal yourself to me. And if you do, I will give you my life. If you can give me the faith that I see in them, I will give you my life. And so that's exactly, he took me up on that offer. So what I wanted, you know, I told him, look, you communicate yourself to me and everything else is bulldozed out of the way. You know, that relationship with you will be the most important thing in my life. If you're willing to do that, which of course I never dreamt it would happen. So that the moment that it did was absolutely startling. And it remains just as startling now, 27 years later. You know, last week, it was the 27th anniversary of that event. And, you know, so here I am. So I left that retreat, a believer. I finished my undergraduate degree. I did two master's degrees after that. And then I entered seminary 7 years after that conversion event and was ordained a priest. And shortly after that, I was appointed an exorcist.
Wow. I love that story. I heard this story in a similar, a paraphrased version of it in the Exorcist Files, which our listeners can check out at exorcistfiles.tv. And I recounted that story to my wife and to my children. Now, I have young children who probably aren't going to be listening to the exorcistfiles.tv anytime soon for no reason other than getting them to sit down and listen to anything is difficult at their age. But it, you know, but I was telling them that story and I just love that. Father, you know, show me and I will give you my life. And I got to be honest with you. I get choked up when I heard that because it's so beautiful. It's so profoundly honest and open. And it strikes me. So much of the time, sort of in this Catholic bubble that a lot of us live in, you know, we're you know, it's easy for us to kind of wag our fingers at others and, oh, they don't believe what we believe. And they, you know, what do they believe? And sort of you were not brought into the faith because people were wagging their finger at you. It's that it goes back to that old saying that we'll know us by our love. You came because you recognized something beautiful.
Right.
And I just think that's a lesson that we all need to really pay attention to. I think about people like Abby Johnson, who is a former, you know, abortion clinic manager, right? And same thing. She came because she witnessed something horrific, but she recognized the people on the sidewalk had open arms and they loved her and they were offering her something that she'd never experienced before. And so I see that with you. So thank you for sharing that amazing, beautiful story. So, okay. The Exorcist Files is, again, it's just incredible. The real, and these are the real case files of Exorcist Father Carlos Martins, opened for the first time. And so these, and Ryan, the host, helps kind of moderate the program. He's definitely entertaining to listen to, you know, kind of jokes. He's like, there really is a vault. So it's just incredible. And I recognize now too, on your website, exorcistfiles.tv, it says there's been 1 million downloads, which is just incredible. And I was reflecting on this the other night, thinking about what I could ask you. And I was sort of praying about it. One of the things that came to my mind is this question is, how does the secular world respond to something like The Exorcist Files? And what sort of response have you seen? Is this a tool that is going to, that you believe will evangelize?
Yeah, well, the secular world, it covers the gamut, if you will, their response to it. I've met many people, about 6 weeks ago, I was at the premiere of a Hollywood movie called Nefarious, and at the premiere, at the director's premiere, it's a private event, but it contains a lot of people from the industry and so forth. And although those directors, is co-directed by two persons, Carrie Solomon and Chuck Konzelman, they are Christians. So a lot of their friends are going to be Christians as well. But, with Hollywood, there's lots of non-Christians. And I was astounded there of course, I was dressed as a priest. When they came up to me and introduced themselves to me, and I did myself to them, many of them knew about the podcast. Oh, you produce that podcast that everyone is talking about. So that was a surprise. And in fact, you hinted at it. We released the 8th episode. And just after that, we hit 1 million downloads with just 8 episodes. So it has become very popular. I mean, I knew it would not be. I knew that it was not going to be non-popular. I knew that just the subject matter itself is going to produce an interest. However, none of us, myself included, ever imagined it would have this kind of success. And, you already spoke to the fact that the production value, the production quality is very high. And we were certain about that. We wanted that. So when the Holy See asked me to undertake a catechesis of exorcism, which happened just before COVID, so the Vatican asked me to provide a catechesis, a teaching, in order to educate people just on spiritual warfare, on evil, on demonic possession, and the Church's ministry of exorcism, because, A, there's an extraordinarily... The number of cases are extraordinarily increasing. And two, a lot of the information out there, even by some clergy, is just bad information. It's an erroneous teaching, or it isn't nuanced enough. When I sat down and planned, okay, how am I going to roll this out? I opted for the podcast to be phase one. And why? Well, because really of my encountering the results of two surveys. One was done by the Pew survey folks, and what they discovered, so they divided the population up into demographics. And in the demographic of 18 to 29-year-olds, in a span of just 5 years, those folks that are 18 to 29, the number of them that abandoned religion altogether increased by one third in just 5 years, right? Which is simply staggering. At the same time, in a separate survey, it was discovered that the same demographic, 18 to 29-year-olds, 63% of them believe it is possible for someone to become demonically possessed. So in this age group, in this demographic that is increasingly abandoning religion, something is occurring in their lives that is making them conclude that the devil is real. And so I thought, you know what, somebody has to speak to this group. And, you know, when people tune into the podcast, you know, what they're not going to encounter is just as important as what they do encounter. They're not going to encounter me giving a lecture on the demonic and the church's theology of the devil and so on and so forth. If I were to produce mere lectures, none of those, that target demographic is going to tune in, right? That's just not their thing. If I were to make it sound like a prayer group and begin with a prayer to St. Michael the Archangel, again, they're going to hear that and they're going to say, you know what, this just isn't for me. But if they hear a dramatic reenactment of an exorcism, well, there's a bit of a hook there. And so in hearing that, in hearing the production quality, and then the theology that I weave in to explain what is happening here, why did the devil do this as opposed to that? Well, now there's an interest in it for them, and they listen out of an interest. And so we are using here the devil to proclaim the gospel. If I were to proclaim the gospel by proclaiming the gospel, they wouldn't tune in. But if I use the anti-gospel to proclaim the gospel, now I have an audience, and that's what I'm going to.
Amazing. Just absolutely amazing. You're listening to Father Carlos Martins of The Exorcist Files. That's an amazing new podcast with over 1 million downloads and counting. And I just want to thank our listeners. We'll be right back in just a minute with more Q&A with Father Carlos Martins.
Train my hands for my fingers for battle, fortify my soul. We'll fight with faith, hope, and love.
Catholic Spirit Radio is hosting another outdoor rosary event, and you're invited. On Wednesday, May 31st, the Feast of the Visitation, we will gather in the north parking lot of 108 Boykins Place in Normal. Popcorn and treats, tours of the station, and fellowship begin at 7 p.m. The Joyful Mysteries at 7:30, plus After the Rosary, an hour movie called Oceans of Mercy. Bring your family, friends, and lawn chairs on May 31st for an enjoyable evening of the rosary, a movie, treats, and a special drawing.
Help seniors remain independent. Faith in Action is a nonprofit providing transportation for people over 60 to medical appointments and grocery stores. Become a Faith in Action driver in the extended Bloomington Normal area, 309-827-7780.
Wondering about your next step? Ashley was in school and pregnant when she reached out to the Pregnancy Resource Center. Would she be judged? Would she be accepted? What she found at LAPRC was a team of people who were committed to providing excellent care and compassionate support to those facing pregnancy decisions through authentic relationships that display grace, honor life, and foster community. If you or someone you know is in a situation like Ashley, or if you want to help support women and families in our community, you can find us at pregnancyresourcecenter.org.
Hi, this is Kathy
and Anne
from Catholic Spirit Radio. We are looking for folks who would love to volunteer with us during our fundraisers and various other station events and tasks throughout the year.
We really need volunteers in the DeKalb, Sycamore, Morris, Joliet, and Lincoln areas, as well as Bloomington Normal.
If you have a few extra hours or more a month, put them to use for the Lord.
We would love to add your name to our Catholic Spirit Radio volunteer list. Contact us at office@catholicspiritradio.org.
What Hollywood portrayed in the movie The Exorcist with levitations, vomiting, spitting at the priest with an uncanny marksmanship, all of that has not been a movie for me. I have seen that firsthand. My name is Father Carlos Martins. I am a priest of the Catholic Church. I was an atheist until as a young adult, the Lord brought me out of darkness. And since then, I have been living in His love. But I've also seen things. Very evil things that I wish weren't true.
The job of the exorcist, properly speaking, is not to cast out the devil. The job of the exorcist is to find out, why is the devil there? What rights has the demon gained? What doorway has he entered through? This is the first time I've opened my files about these battles to the public.
Thank you for listening to Truth, Culture, Life. We want to give a special shout out to Catholic Spirit Radio for broadcasting this program. What you just heard was the official trailer for The Exorcist Files, which is, you can find that video and you can find more links to Father Martin's podcast as well as to some of his media appearances at exorcistfiles.tv. Here's the rest of our interview. Welcome back. I am Royce Hood, and you're listening to a very special episode of Truth, Culture, Life. We're joined today by priest Father Carlos Martins, who is the host of The Exorcist Files, which is, again, just an extraordinary listening experience. And we were just talking about, we talked about his background, his conversion from atheist to priest to exorcist. And I love how Ryan refers to you as, is it the demonic disciplinarian or demon disciplinarian? It's sort of funny, but it's a great title. And then Father went into and talked to us a little bit about the production quality and why this was produced. It's very intentional. You can hear it. It's not like this show. The show, I'm sort of flying, you know, shooting in the dark here. It's very intentional. When you listen to The Exorcist Files, the production quality, the script, it's so well done. Father, and the words that come to mind as you're describing it is outwardly versus inwardly. Outwardly versus inwardly. And I think I'm going to publish a monologue on this later this week. And it's, the idea is this. So much of the time, Catholics we're speaking inwardly. We're sort of preaching to the choir. And what I recognize with The Exorcist Files is you're doing that, but you've got this outwardly projection where you're speaking to the world. And it reminds me, the image that comes to mind is like this candle that's lit up walking into the darkness, and you're illuminating the things around you with the messages. And what you were saying before is, you know, look, if we had started this off just as a lecture, as a prayer or whatever, there are people that would not hear it. And I would love to see the results. And I don't know if there's a way that your team can figure out how to survey your listeners, but it would be really cool to send out a survey to your listeners. Hey, what is your faith affiliation, if any? And then 3 months later, ask them to participate again. Has that changed at all? Because I would bet you're going to see some conversions, or for sure. I just think you are. In my own life, I consider myself a decent Catholic. As Tom Monahan, founder of Domino's Pizza, says, are you a good Catholic? And he says, no, but I'm trying to be. That's where I'm at. I'm trying to be a good Catholic. Since listening to The Exorcist Files, I've been thinking a lot about quote unquote doorways and some of the thing that my own sins and the issues that I have, and how those doorways could impact my home and my family. And those are things I didn't think about it in that context before. So even inwardly, I feel like you're going to see more, you know, that the process of conversion is lifelong. And so I want to talk about doorways a little bit. We had a lot of great responses to a Facebook post. What questions do we have? And talk to us about doorways. What is a doorway? What is that in the context of The Exorcist Files?
Right. So, you know, demons live in wounds. They are attracted to wounds. And in order for them to be able to cling to us, they need to be let in. In other words, a door, an action has to be done, that action is the doorway by which they enter into our lives. So demons do not need a doorway to perform what the church calls the ordinary demonic activity, which is temptation. And even our Lord was subject to temptation. No human being is not subject to temptation. And so that's their ordinary activity. And to be honest, that is the most deadly, because it's only through sin, mortal sin, what Catholics call mortal sin, a sin so grave that it evicts the Holy Spirit from inside us. It evicts sacramental grace. from being present within us. So any of the violation of the Ten Commandments, for example, in a serious manner. So one of the commandments is thou shalt not lie. If you tell what people call a little white lie, your wife asks you, does this dress make me look fat? And inside your mind, you're thinking, oh, heavens, yes. But you say, no, it's a white lie. It's that doesn't destroy grace. All lying is sinful. It damages our relationship with God. But only mortal sin destroys that sacramental, life-giving connection that we have with God. And so when that occurs, we revert to being the property and possession of the devil. We belong to him. If you die in the state of mortal sin, you will never see the inside of heaven. That's what mortal sin is. It makes your soul mortal, subject to death. Right? Only sacramental grace, which is the very life of God. It's another way of saying God's life that he has imparted to us through the sacraments, initially through our baptism, and that's why I use the word we revert to the devil, because when we were conceived inside the womb of our mother, all of us, because of original sin, the devil is to whom we belonged, not God, and absolutely not our parents. And this is why we baptize, to get rid of that inheritance of death. And that's what original sin is. It's an original separation from God that is permanent unless there is that intervention by God and we accept that intervention. That intervention is called baptism.
Let me ask you this, Father. We had a lot of questions about familial possession and a few about children in particular. And one of the episodes of The Exorcist Files, which our listeners can hear at exorcistfiles.tv, there was, I think I forget his name, the bodybuilder. He was like 8 years old where he participated in an Ouija board.
Right. Jeremy.
He had no idea what the Ouija board was, but he thought it looked cool. Next thing you know, he actually sees a demon basically and converses with it. And what, 15 years later, he's this massive man. And what age, Father, is it? I mean,
there is no set age. The devil is prowling like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour, right? This is what St. Peter tells us in his epistle. He is prowling like a roaring lion. And yeah, in the case of that, in that episode, Jeremy, who was 7, 8 years old, is invited to participate by his brothers in a Ouija board. And guess what? A demon was summoned. They didn't intend to, but that's in fact what it is. Well, always when you open those kinds of portals. And then the demon formed a relationship with him. Now, some people can say, you know, some people will retort, they're scandalized by this. Like, well, I don't believe that thing is possible. Yeah, I mean, whether or not you believe it is irrelevant to the facts. The fact is, you know, that 7 or 8 year old, somebody could knock on his front door and he opens the door without looking at it. And you know what? Guess what? On the other side of that door could be a guy with a knife. And now that's Jeremy's last day on this earth. Now, he didn't intend to be killed. He didn't intend to open the door to somebody, but he did. And so he's subject to the consequences of that. In the spiritual realm, it's no different. That the spiritual realm has both grace and has evil in it. And both of those elements are genuine, and both of those elements are trying to seek you out. And if you hit the wrong one of the two, then that element has a relationship with you, and there are consequences to that relationship.
No, that's amazing to think about. And again, that episode was just mind-boggling how Jeremy would lose complete control. He would lose awareness of his situation and become violent, and you know, the things I just remember, you know, hearing the part where he realized consciously that he needed to go to confession. He went, and the demon did everything it could to prevent him from giving his confession.
Right.
What? Yeah, go ahead. I mean,
with him, you know, so a demon is not ever satisfied forming a relationship and kind of staying there. What the demon wants is to increase that relationship steadily. And so over the years, as he got older, Jeremy noticed, I am losing more and more freedom. That things that I ought to be free to do, that others do, I don't have the freedom to do. So the demon is never happy coming in and staying on kind of like floor number six, right? He is always trying to usurp and take over the entire building. And so Jeremy at a certain point realized this, so that the deal or the pact that the demon made was, obviously he offered Jeremy powerful strength. He assured him that I will make you strong if you let me in. And Jeremy had no idea what being let in meant. And in fact, it used a word that was unknown to him. If you give me X, and he couldn't even remember what that word was. It was a nonsensical sounding word. If you give me that, then I will make you really strong. And Jeremy said, yeah. And at that moment, there's a relationship. That's the opening of the door. So it's not a physical door, but it is a spiritual door. And guess what? Now we've got a covenant. And that covenant exists until Jeremy himself breaks it. And me as an exorcist, any exorcist, the church itself, we have no power to end that relationship. Why? Well, because people have a right to belong to the devil if that's what they want. So the job of the exorcist isn't to cast out the devil. It's not to come in and overpower the devil with grace and with the prayers of the church, with a ritual, a rite that the church gives him. The job of the exorcist is to find out why is the devil there and to aid the victim in ending that relationship. Mm. Right? That's the job of the exorcist. So it's not, it is a combat. But it's not a combat the way most people think. An exorcist isn't coming in and you know, using some prayers that in effect are magic, and they magically get rid of the devil. There could be nothing further from the truth. The relationship that is keeping the devil there, that has to be ended. And a different relationship, one that is godly, one that connects the victim to God, that has to be established such that there's no neutrality, right? There's no such thing as being demon-free and being unconnected to God. That kind of neutral state doesn't exist. You've got to replace one relationship with another. And if you do that, then the devil has to leave because he loses his rights. And as a lawyer, Rice, you know that in a contract, rights mean that one of the two parties really has an authority to assert a condition, that party is entitled to that condition, and the other party or parties have a duty to observe that condition. And so, you know, an exorcist is nothing more, you could say, than God's lawyer.
Yeah.
That he's coming in to establish, to alter conditions that are innately unjust, but he must have the victim's cooperation. If he doesn't, then his work is futile. Now, it is the case in possession that a lot of times the victims are not able to cooperate, that the victims, you know, in the state of possession, they're not even aware of what's happening around them. Their consciousness is rendered unconscious, so that they are not cognitively aware of what is happening around them, what their body is being used for in the state of possession. Nevertheless, and so I come in, any exorcist comes in and begins praying, begins weakening that hold of the devil. But at a certain point, we need to connect with the victim and get the victim to renounce that relationship with the devil and to commit to one with God. If the victim refuses to do that, there is nothing we can do.
What? So, okay. And I'm thinking about that, you know, the fact that there are probably people right now who are, I mean, they just have no control. Right. They have they've got such a deep relationship with the occult or with demonic activity that they've got practically no or zero relationship with God.
Right.
Some of the criticism I've seen over the years is, well, Royce, not everybody has the same beliefs as you. Not everybody thinks the same way. I start thinking to myself, well, it doesn't really matter. People are entitled. God gave us all free will. People are entitled to think whatever they want. But truth is it's divine. I mean, how do you address that with non-believers? I don't know. It's one of these abstract questions where I'm trying to wrap my head around it. Like, how do we present these arguments, or do we at all?
Well, look, I think the way I chose to present this topic in the podcast, in the Exorcist Files podcast, is to present a case, a situation from the start. So there's a reenactment with professional actors of a real situation where the devil became involved in people's lives. And I do it in this manner because I am taking advantage of one thing, that the way God created us, we understand innately, whether we are Christian or whether we are not, every person, every culture, every human being has a primordial fear of the devil. And that primordial fear surpasses the fear of any other concept, of any other figure, if you will. That, you know, when Hollywood wants to terrify, not just scare, but terrify, it produces a movie about the devil. It produces a possession movie. So, you know, that is way more scary, way more effective at frightening people than, say, a movie about an alien or aliens or vampires, werewolves, you know, a human enemy, an invading army, that kind of thing. When Hollywood wants to terrify, it produces a movie about the devil. And during that movie in a theater, you never find anybody laughing. You find people who are riveted by the concept because it's touching something inside them. Even I remember having recently a conversation with an agnostic, so somebody who doesn't believe in God but thinks, you know, there might be a God, there may not be a God. And so he has listened to every episode multiple times. And I asked him, you know, why do you do so? And he said, well, I find it realistic. And I said, wait a second, explain that to me. What do you mean by realistic? And what he described is, look, I am confronted internally that if this is true, and he said, frankly, the way you present it, I find it very believable that I am, that this priest in these interactions with the devil is dealing with something that is ancient and predates all of us. That something was here from the beginning of the creation of the physical universe, and that is very aware of everyone and everything happening within it. And that concept is a terrifying concept. And so it's speaking to him in terms of that element that we talk about in terms of the spiritual realm being an eternal realm. Being, you know, the earth is new, the physical universe is new relative to the age of that, of the spiritual, of the angels, including the fallen angels, and of course, God.
So let's do this. We have one more commercial break. We'll do that really quick, and we'll come right back with Father Carlos Martins of the Exorcist Files, and you're listening to Truth, Culture, Life. We'll be right back.
Thank you. Catholic Spirit Radio is hosting another outdoor rosary event, and you're invited. On Wednesday, May 31st, the Feast of the Visitation, we will gather in the north parking lot of 108 Boykins Place in Normal. Popcorn and treats, tours of the station, and fellowship begin at 7 p.m. The Joyful Mysteries at 7:30, plus after the rosary, an hour movie called Oceans of Mercy. Bring your family, friends, and lawn chairs on May 31st for an enjoyable evening of the rosary, a movie, treats, and a special drawing.
Help seniors remain independent. Faith in Action is a nonprofit providing transportation for people over 60 to medical appointments and grocery stores. Become a Faith in Action driver in the extended Bloomington Normal area, 309-827-7780.
Wondering about your next step? Ashley was in school and pregnant when she reached out to the Pregnancy Resource Center. Would she be judged? Would she be accepted? What she found at LAPRC was a team of people who were committed to providing excellent care and compassionate support to those facing pregnancy decisions through authentic relationships that display grace, honor life, and foster community. If you or someone you know is in a situation like Ashley, or if you want to help support women and families in our community, you can find us at pregnancyresourcecenter.org.
Hi, this is Kathy
and Ann
from Catholic Spirit Radio. We are looking for folks who would love to volunteer with us during our fundraisers and various other station events and tasks throughout the year.
We really need volunteers in the DeKalb, Sycamore, Morris, Joliet, and Lincoln areas, as well as Bloomington Normal.
If you have a few extra hours or more a month, put them to use for the Lord.
We would love to add your name to our Catholic Spirit Radio volunteer list. Contact us at office@catholicspiritradio.org.
Welcome back to Truth, Culture, Life. I'm Royce Hood, and I'm joined today again by very special guest, Father Carlos Martins from the Exorcist Files podcast. And our listeners, if you're curious, it's on Spotify, it's on iTunes, it's on iHeart Radio. You can listen to it anywhere, but also go to exorcistfiles.tv, and there are links. There's contact information, episode information. You can read all about the project, and it's just incredible. So, Father, we've been talking about a lot of different things, and we unfortunately probably don't have time to hit all of the questions that our listeners have submitted. One of the things that, though, I think is interesting, we were talking about, it might have been episode two, one of the earlier episodes, Cheryl was a young woman that was having difficulty conceiving. And so she turned to, as we've talked about relationships, she started developing this relationship with the occult and energy and trying to, you know, kill insects to create a life force. And she became frighteningly possessed. And her husband became aware that something was really, really wrong. And they were not, I don't believe they were practicing Catholics or really even Christian. They went to a Methodist church every now and then.
Right.
And you got the phone call by a Methodist pastor, if I remember correctly, and you just happened to be in town. You were dressed in plain clothes, which was fascinating. And you went to the house to meet Cheryl and dressed in plain clothes. Can you recount for us very briefly what happened?
Sure. Yeah. So I received this phone call asking if I could meet with this man and his because his wife has her behavior has dramatically changed. Her voice has deepened incredibly. She, this meek, mild, soft-spoken woman, has become just this raging beast, and that all but physically attacked him, but did throw a pot of food in the kitchen, and just her voice, a bellowing voice, emerged from this petite woman. So when the call came in that day, I happened to be helping a friend clean out his garage. So I was in t-shirt and shorts. And so that individual, this gentleman whose wife needed help, who he wanted to seek out help for his wife, lived only about 5 miles away. So we agreed to meet at a coffee shop once I was done what I was doing, helping my friend out. So we had a coffee and he told me the kinds of things that were happening. And so I just said, look, let's go to your house and let's visit your wife. So I went wearing a t-shirt and shorts. And so his wife had no idea that I was coming, that her husband was bringing home anyone. And certainly had no idea that I was a priest, and there was nothing about my appearance that would bespeak that. And we walked towards the house. We walked up the stairs. He opened the door. We walked in. And she immediately ran to the couch and in a kind of a seated fetal position, screamed at, she took that position and screamed at him, "Why did you bring this bastard priest here?" And I asked her, "Who are you?" And with an expletive, the demon answered, "You know who the beep I am." So there was, you know, one of the conditions for discerning a possession state, that someone is possessed, is the knowledge of hidden realities. So there's an example of that. Mm. So the demon in her knew I was a priest, and there was no way that Cheryl could have known. Cheryl didn't know anything about me. I had never met me. At the time, I certainly didn't have the public profile that I have today, and yet the demon knew. You know, the two other signs are knowledge of languages that the victim has never been taught, and superhuman strength. Mm. So strength that far exceeds the capacity of the individual's natural state. So the existence of those signs affirm and establish the presence of the demonic.
Wow. Just incredible. And again, just for our listeners, that's exorcistfiles.tv. And all the names of the victims have been changed to protect their identity. But these stories are true, and they come right out of Father Martin's vault, his files, hence the name Exorcist Files. Father, one of the questions that we received has to do with the rise in paganism. And I thought this was interesting because, as you referred to, a Pew study of one-third of young people are of abandoned faith. We see this rise in these false idols. And one of the questions, though...
One-third are abandoning faith every 5 years.
Every five years. That's just staggering. So what... are mythical gods, you know, actually demons? Do we know?
They're demons.
Zeus, Ra. What about the Nordic gods, right? We have entire movies dedicated to Thor and so forth.
Right. And in Scandinavian countries, there's a reversion now back to the old mythology, a religious reversion. So people are once again believing in these ancient Norse mythological spirits. Mm. Right. And so this is a reversion to paganism. And you know, what's interesting is one of the ways in which Christianity received a lot of converts and how Christianity presented itself as truthful and as powerful, as real, is the success that Christian exorcists had over the demons. I mean, the church fathers write about this, that the pagans saw that the Christian exorcists had a power over possessing spirits. And, well, if that's the most powerful religion, then if I'm not a Christian, then I'm in the wrong religion. And so that witness in and of itself caused a great amount of conversions.
We see that today with our Protestant brothers and sisters, right? That we see referrals when there's a situation, particularly in different, you know, denominations, where they will say, "Hey, listen, you need to go speak to a priest."
Right. Right. And there is, an almost universal acknowledgement that, the Catholics and the Orthodox, certainly we are one church, even though we are separated, for we are not in full communion with one another, but certainly I don't have anything more in terms of authority than what an Orthodox priest would have. He's received his priesthood from a bishop who possesses apostolic succession. He confects the Eucharist validly. So I have nothing over and above him. So the Catholic and the Orthodox have an authority that that no one else has with regard to the demons. And most Protestant denominations, when they encounter a demon, come to know this and they will acknowledge this.
Is this, and by orthodoxy, do you mean the Eastern and Western churches?
Correct.
Right. And that's there's so much history there. It's fascinating. I want to ask you, Father, you mentioned the catechesis of exorcism. Phase one is this podcast. Can you tell us what phase two is? Is there going to be more?
Yeah, phase two is a book, and it will be released later this year.
Great. And I'm just guessing, again, we're about to close our questions with Father Martins. But we talked about, you know, some of these movies like Thor. It's entertaining. I enjoy Thor. It's sort of a fun movie to watch. But it's paganism. It's you know, talking about a false god in a fictional manner. But people, in effect, you know, they love it. Imagine for a moment if somebody would create movies like highlighting, you know, imagine like the epic of like The Fall, for instance, or, you know, truly like films that are based truly on the church, but that could be delivered in a manner similar to some of these Marvel movies. Just food for thought. I'm just guessing if you haven't already, you're going to be getting calls from all sorts of agents and Hollywood people wanting to get rights to these different files because they're just remarkable. And every single one of them could be a movie. I don't know if there's a question there or not, but just my thought.
Sure. Yeah. So this does speak to what I mentioned, that kind of primordial fear that God has planted in us of the ancient serpent. And the ancient serpent fascinates because he is scary. And there is something innate within us that recoils at that concept. So we're hardwired to react when we encounter the devil.
Just closing here in a second, the difference between oppression and mental illness, right? And one of the first things you do in an exorcism, you try to seek mental health evaluations. How can people listening, we had a few questions about this too. How do people discern the difference? Like, am I suffering? I've got something going on, or somebody in my family does.
Right. So that certainly is an art. And in the episodes, I take great pains to explain and parse that stuff out for folks because there is no magic formula. You know, it's not like, oh, well, you know, look, if the leaf is green, then it's a demon. If it's red, then it's not a demon. It's not as simple as that. So there has to be a discernment rendered in order for a diagnosis to be made. And you know, the devil operates in a certain manner, and he will camouflage his activity to make it look like mental illness so that people will think, oh, you know what, there's nothing wrong with Aunt Sally other than the fact that, well, she's a schizophrenic or she has some other kind of mental illness. She's got dissociative identity disorder. So he will camouflage his behavior for that. And so we have to be aware of that. And we have to examine to see, is there camouflaging happening here or not? Is there something here that natural illness cannot account for? And so that's, you know, the hardest part about exorcism is rendering a diagnosis. It's the diagnostic phase of healing, because it's not simple. And the differences can be immensely subtle. And often the devil doesn't reveal himself until you start praying. But sometimes if you just start praying with somebody who has mental illness, they can play the part. In other words, the illness itself will react to the prayers and make it look like, hey, there's something demonic here when frankly there just isn't. Mm-hmm. Other people, their imaginations are so acute that they find it impossible to distinguish imagined reality from reality. And that's just the way they're made, right? They just live, their faculty of the imagination is so acute. And these are people that make great storytellers. These are people that that can be great artists. They can picture a reality and then work to incarnate it. But at the same time, some folks cannot themselves distinguish the real from what they imagine. And so all of the, you know, an exorcist has to be aware of all of this. And so what he's using is a series of techniques and diagnoses and observations, tests, in order to make a determination, the devil is here. No, you know what? There's no evidence the devil is here at all.
The only other question I have for you has to do with adoration. You experienced your conversion, really, I mean, in large part, in adoration. Is how important is adoration for, or even just prayer? I mean, a lot of people are asking the question, how do we protect our families? How do we protect ourselves? What can people do to armor up?
You become holy. So that means two things. Get rid of sin out of your life. It is impossible to become holy when there's sin. And secondly, develop a robust prayer life. Develop a friendship with God that is present within prayer. And those two things, and of course, we pray also in terms of our actions, our activities, by service to the poor, by you know, being a Christian witness, doing everything that the Christian life demands of us, that's prayer. But of course, we must eliminate sin. You do those two things, you have nothing to worry about.
Father, there's a subscribe button on your website, exorcistfiles.tv. If people subscribe with their email address,
yep,
will they get information about the book and different things that you have coming
they
up?
They will. So those, I highly encourage people to sign up because they will be the first to know when something new comes out, and they also get content that no one else does.
That's great. Father Carlos Martins, thank you again for joining this program, and this is Truth, Culture, Life.
Train my hands for war, my fingers for battle.